This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
Keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hello, this is Gary Clinton again with another episode of Night Transmissions, the 85th one. Gonna open up today with a show from Australia called The Clock, which was a 30-minute suspense mystery series that ran from November the 3rd of 1946 to May the 23rd of 1948, for a total of 78 shows. Now, 65 of these shows were written by Lawrence Klee and produced in Australia by Grace Gibbs. You wouldn't know it, though. For the most part, the actors have very American-sounding accents. And in fact, in reality, of the 78 shows, only 65 were produced in Australia. The final 13 were made by ABC and produced with entirely American actors and production crews. This particular episode is from March the 3rd of 1947. It's the story of Laura and Joe, an idyllic couple, a happily married couple, who one evening look out the front door to observe the arrival of Cousin Mary. She's come to stay for just one night. Or maybe it's just a little while. They all get along fine until the worm turns and turns again.
Sunrise and sunset. Promise and fulfillment. Birth and death. The whole drama of life is written in the sands of time.
We present a new series of radio programs, The Clock.
Have you ever noticed how time has a sameness about itself? Each hour you receive in life is guaranteed to be of uniform quantity, although its quality depends to a large extent on you. The life we live has a sameness about it, too. Doing the same things every day may have its duller moments, but we are often compensated by the security it affords. And sometimes, when the monotony is broken, we'd give the world to have it back again. When Joe and Nora Spencer were married, they went to Niagara Falls like so many millions before them. Later, they bought a little five-room suburban house, and it looked exactly like the hundreds of other five-room suburban houses you see so often. As a matter of fact, life itself was a carbon copy to Joe and Nora Spencer, a carbon copy they believed in and were happy with, until they discovered that their life was destined to have a new and an original twist.
Goodness. 10 o'clock.
I guess we'll hit the hay early tonight, Nora.
Mm-hmm. Finished with the newspaper?
Just about. Sure. Looks like we'll have a nice day tomorrow. Mostly sunny, it says, with moderate west to southwest winds.
Oh, Joe, is actually the Howards are coming over tomorrow night?
Oh, you didn't have to tell me. Tomorrow's Monday, isn't it?
Oh, that's right.
Monday, the Howards. Tuesday, Bill Pepper and his wife. Wednesday, the movie.
You make it sound like a routine.
Well, it's a routine, more or less.
Do you mind it?
You know I don't.
Sometimes I wonder if the life we lead is a little too dull for you.
Funny, I've thought of the same thing about you.
I'm very happy, Joe. You know that.
Sure, I know.
And I wouldn't want anything to change it.
Nothing ever will.
I wish I were sure of that. I wish I were sure that you and I and this house would go on forever, just as we are.
Hey, what's got into you tonight?
I don't know. I guess I'm so happy I'm just looking for trouble.
Well, you better cut it out or you'll get spanked.
How about we hit the hay?
All right.
You go ahead. I'll put the lights out.
Hey, what's that?
What?
Well, there's a cab just stopped in front of the door.
Uh-huh.
Someone's getting out.
Why, it looks like Amy Gibbs.
Your cousin?
What on earth is she doing here? The last I heard, she was living in Wisconsin.
It's a funny time to make a call.
Oh, she's coming up the walk, Joe.
I'll let her in.
Cousin Joe.
Hello there, Amy. Come in.
Amy, darling.
Oh, Cousin Nora. My goodness, it's nice to see you both.
What are you doing so far away from home?
Didn't you get my letter?
Why, no, we didn't.
Oh, dear, maybe I sent it to the wrong address. That's why you're so surprised to see me. I've come to New York to get a job.
Really?
I've been living all alone, you know, ever since Mother died. I decided that Wisconsin was a little too small for me, and New York would be so much more exciting.
Well, you'll find it a lot more crowded, anyway.
I found that out already, Cousin Joe. That's why I'm here. Well, I hope you won't think I'm intruding.
Why, not at all, Amy.
But my train got in 2 hours ago, and would you believe it? I can't find a single hotel in the town that has a room for me.
That's not unusual. The hotels are very crowded these days.
I checked my bags at the station, and then I remembered about Cousin Joe and Cousin Nora and wondered if they'd mind putting up with poor little me for just one night.
Why, of course not, Amy.
Well, no, we've got an extra room upstairs.
Oh, that's sweet of you both. I'm sure I can get a hotel room tomorrow, and I'll try not to get in the way.
Well, you just forget about getting in our way, Amy. You're welcome here, and you ought to know it. I'll fix the room up for you right away.
I'm sorry I didn't bring my overnight bag. I haven't even got a toothbrush.
Oh, I can give you a nightgown, anything else you need.
Oh, no, I think I'd better go back to the station and get my overnight bag. Oh, have you got any small bills, Cousin Joe? My smallest is a 20, and I couldn't get back to the cab driver.
Oh, let's see. Yeah. Oh, will 4 singles do?
Oh, that's just perfect. And as long as I'm at it, I may as well bring all my luggage up here. You never know when things are misplaced in these public lockers.
Sure.
Oh, don't wait up for me now. Just leave the key under the mat. I'll be back in an hour or so. And thanks again, Cousin Nora. Thanks loads.
Well, I'd better get her room ready.
Nora?
Yes, Joe?
Nothing at all. Oh, good morning, Nora.
Good morning, dear. Here's your coffee.
Thanks.
Oh, be careful. It's very hot.
Where's Amy? I thought I'd go downtown with her and help her find a place to stay.
I'm afraid poor Amy isn't feeling very well.
She isn't?
I spoke to her up in a room a little while ago. She's had an attack of migraine or something. She asked me if she could stay another day or so until she got over it.
Oh, well, if she's ill...
I told her she could stay as long as she liked.
You did?
Well, I was only being polite, Joe. I'm sure she'll be gone in a day or two as soon as she's well.
I still wish you hadn't told her that.
Well, why?
I don't know. I just wish you hadn't. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't be that way. It's just that I'm not used to having someone around. It's always been you and me and no one else, and I'm afraid I like it that way.
How do you feel, Amy?
Much better, Cousin Nora. I'll be out of bed very soon. You and Cousin Joe have both been so good to me.
Oh, it's the least we could do.
And don't think I'll ever forget it either. I never will.
Well, I'll leave you now. I've got some work to do downstairs.
All right, Cousin Nora. And I'll have my lunch in bed again today. Really, Cousin Nora, I've tried so hard to find a job. But I just can't seem to get one that suits me. And as far as apartments are concerned, they're impossible to get. Oh, yeah, and you wouldn't want poor little me to live in a furnished room, would you? It's so much nicer here.
I guess one of us should speak to her, Joe.
Well, it's kind of hard to ask her to leave.
But she makes no attempt to find a place of her own. Well, you know we can't afford to support her here indefinitely. She's borrowed over $100 from you already.
Well, yes, that's right.
And she hasn't even tried to find a job. Oh, I hate to ask her, but we have to. She's simply got to give us a definite date about leaving.
Well, I'll talk to her myself, Nora. Tonight. It's Joe, Amy. May I come in?
Oh, please do. I've just been fixing up my room. Isn't it pretty?
Those curtains look familiar.
I took them from your room, Cousin Joe. Well, I didn't think that Cousin Nora would mind. They look so much nicer here.
Amy, I want to talk to you.
About what? Well,
you've been here over a month now.
Oh, has it been that long? My, how time flies.
No, it isn't that. We don't want to rush you, but... Nora and I'd like to know exactly how long you plan to stay.
Oh, I'll be leaving soon.
How soon?
Cousin Joe, you almost sound as if you're anxious for me to go.
Well,
You've really liked having me here. I know that. I can tell the way you look at me sometimes.
I don't know what you mean.
Your life has been so dull, Cousin Joe. So unexciting. Haven't I brought something new into it?
Really?
Yesterday, while I was doing my hair in front of the mirror, my door was open. I saw you watching me.
Well, I just glanced in.
I've seen that look in a man's eyes before.
Amy, this is crazy.
You've watched me often, Cousin Joe. When I've walked up and down the stairs, when I've laughed. Sometimes I didn't even have to see you. I could feel your eyes.
Amy, you've got to leave.
I'm young, Joe. Young and pretty. Boys have told me lots of times how pretty I am. They say I do something to them. Do I do something to you, Joe?
Amy.
Put your arms around me. Please, Joe. Hold me in your arms. Now, tell me to leave and I'll go. Joe. Darling Joe. Did you speak to her, Joe?
Yes, I talked to her.
When is she leaving?
Nora, I've been thinking it over. I mean, you see, it doesn't seem fair to...
But Joe!
Let us stay a little longer, Nora. Give her a chance to get her bearings.
Well, if you feel that way, it's all right with me. I suppose it can't do any harm?
No, of course not. It can't do any harm at all.
What are you doing with that dress on?
It needs taking in at the seams.
But that's my dress. It's the one I bought for Easter.
Is it now? I didn't know. I just thought I'd borrow it. I'm so sick and tired of wearing the same old clothes.
You had no right to go into my closet.
But Cousin Nora... I was given permission.
By whom?
Cousin Joe.
Joe?
You said you wouldn't mind. Do you mind, Cousin Nora?
Oh, no. No, I guess I don't mind.
Here's my wash, Cousin Nora.
Your wash?
Please be careful what you do to the slips. They're silk, you know.
Are you asking me?
No, Cousin Nora, I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. This house is a mess. Nora, if you can't handle the work yourself, you might at least get a maid. My room hasn't been straightened out all morning. Really, it's a disgrace.
Amy?
Yes?
Would you please come out here for a moment?
I'm doing my nails. Come in here if you want to speak to me.
I've brought your suitcases up from the cellar.
You have? What for?
You're leaving, Amy.
I'm what?
You're leaving this house.
Don't be silly, Cousin Nora.
I've stood for a great deal from you, Amy. I don't know why I have, but now I'm through.
I can tell you why you stood for me, Cousin Nora.
I'm not interested in what...
You were afraid to force a showdown.
Afraid?
You've taken my orders like a servant girl because you didn't want to raise an issue.
That's a lie.
You know what's been going on around here. And you also know that if Joe had to make a choice, you might be out in the cold.
The male animal has been on this earth for quite a while. It's taken him thousands of years to reach his present stage of civilization. But the wrong woman can send him back to the jungle and the caves in exactly half an hour.
How dare you talk to me like that?
Now, let's have no hysterics, Cousin Norna. I think I'm being very generous under the circumstances.
Generous?
I'm letting you stay here, aren't I? I could tell your husband to get rid of you if I wanted to. I could tell him to send you away, but I've got a big heart.
I'm beginning to see that.
You haven't got a chance against me, Nora, and you know it.
How dare you!
The arrangements we have is peculiar, I must admit, but I like it this way. Temporarily, at least. When a man meets another woman, he usually separates from his wife. In this case, I'm adding a little twist to it. I'm letting you stay.
That's very kind of you.
Of course, you have an alternative.
Have I?
You can pack your things and get out.
Joe will give you a divorce.
I'll see that he does.
Well, I'll stay, Amy.
I thought you would. There, my nails are finished. Lovely, aren't they?
Here's your paper, Joe.
Oh, thanks, Nora.
Don't you want to read it?
I haven't time. Where's Amy?
She hasn't come in yet.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Nora. Mr. Lewis is sending me to Chicago for a few days to introduce the new line.
Oh.
I should be home by Thursday. You don't mind, do you? Amy will be here to keep you company. Well, that must be Amy now. Is that you, Amy?
Yes, Cousin Joe.
No, we were worried about you.
Oh, were you? I'm sorry. The picture was a long one, and I did some shopping later.
Well, I'd better get packed. My train leaves in an hour.
Are you going away, Joe?
Just for a few days, Amy. Business. I wish I didn't have to. Well, I'd better get started. See you when I've packed.
You're being very sensible, Cousin Nora.
Am I?
It's always best to accept things as they are. I know you and I'll get along while Cousin Joe is gone. Won't we, Nora?
Oh, yes, Amy. We'll get along. Just fine.
Wet to go out and too dull to stay in. Nora, when did Joe say he'll be home?
Thursday.
And this is only Monday.
Are you bored, Amy?
Very.
I intend to do my best to entertain you.
Entertain me? What can you do for excitement? Play checkers?
You get your share of excitement, Amy. Be patient.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Was I looking at you in any particular way?
Just don't start any funny business, Cousin Nora. You'll regret it.
How old are you, Amy?
That's none of your affair.
You can't be any more than 23 or 4.
What about it?
You have so much to look forward to in life. And there's so much you could miss. I often think of death. Amy. Sometimes when I fall asleep, I dream of it. And it comforts me.
Stop talking like that. I don't like it.
Oh, I think I'll go to bed. My head's been bothering me all day.
If you're sick, why don't you call a doctor?
I'm quite all right. It's just that I keep forgetting things and my head aches so. Good night, Amy.
Good night.
I hope your dreams are as pleasant as mine.
Cousin Nora?
Yes, Amy?
Why are you down in the cellar? What's all that hammering about?
I'm sorry if I disturbed you.
What are you doing with those strips of wood?
Just putting them together.
Do you want to help?
You'd better do your carpentry yourself. You're so much stronger than I am. What's this paper on the floor?
Paper? Oh, it's a blueprint.
Is this what you're making, a washtub?
Does it look like a washtub?
Wooden washtubs aren't very practical, Cousin Nora. And anyway, by the shape of this diagram, it might easily turn out to be a...
A what, Amy?
It almost looks like a coffin.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
What are you trying to pull around here? Is this a cheap trick to scare me? Answer me, do you hear? Answer me.
Go to bed, Amy. Go to bed and get some rest. Amy, I've brought your dinner.
Put the tray on that table and get out.
Very well.
Now leave me alone. Well, what are you standing there for?
I want to know if you like the soup. It's very good. Here, let me...
What did you just put in that soup?
Oh, why nothing.
I saw you drop something in there. What are you trying to do? Poison me?
You shouldn't have smashed that cup, Amy.
Get out! Do you hear? Get out!
Good night, Amy.
I know what I'll do. I'll get the police.
Of night, Amy.
No one.
Why aren't you in bed?
I'm not tired.
Amy.
Don't come near me. You're crazy. You're out of your mind. Stay away from me, no one.
I wish you wouldn't carry on in this way.
What's that?
Oh, it sounds like a police car.
One of the neighbors must have heard me. Now I'll put you where I'll never see you again.
Amy, come.
You see this bottle? I found it in your room. It's poison. You tried to put it in my food. Oh, I'll be rid of you for good now, for good.
Is this the Spencer house?
Oh, officer, you're just in time. She tried to kill me. She tried to poison me. She got out of her head.
Are you Mrs. Spencer?
I'm Mrs. Spencer, officer. I'm the woman who called you before, and this is the girl I told you about.
Oh. All right, girlie, come on. Let's you and me take a little walk.
Oh, but there's nothing wrong with me. She's the one you want. Look. She tried to put this poison into my food. Do you deny that you put this in my food? Do you deny it?
Of course, dear, I put it in. But I tried to tell you it was only saccharin.
Saccharin?
How long has this been going on?
Ever since my husband left, officer. There's a washtub downstairs she keeps referring to as a coffin. Oh, I've done my best to calm her.
She's lying! Can't you see she's lying?
Well, come on, girlie. We can talk it over downtown.
Get your hands off me!
Easy now. Let's not get rough, sister.
Oh, just a moment, officer.
Yeah?
You see, this girl is my cousin, and I feel responsible for her. She's not really insane. It's just that she's emotionally upset. I don't want to see her put away.
Well, that's not up to me, lady.
But if I talk to the proper authorities and testify that she's never really done anything wrong, do you think they might, well, put her under my care?
That all depends, lady. It's up to you.
You'll go away for a nice long rest, won't you, Amy? And if I come down and talk on your behalf, you'll do as I say, won't you, Amy?
You!
Come on, girlie. Come on.
Nora, I'm glad Amy's gone.
You are, Joe?
I was going to ask her to leave myself. Well, this way is better.
You were going to ask her?
You don't believe me, do you?
It doesn't matter now.
Nora, there's something you ought to know.
Don't, Joe.
No, I've been kind of a fool, Nora. I don't know how to explain it.
Then don't try.
This trip was the first time I've been away from you in 12 years. I know it sounds kind of funny, but It gave me time to do a little thinking and to understand how I'd miss you if you went away.
Joe, let's forget it. Amy's gone, and the rest doesn't matter.
This chair feels comfortable. I couldn't find one as soft as this in the whole hotel. Nora, I don't deserve the break you're giving me, but I'll try to make up in some way.
Here's your paper, Joe. I picked it up for you this evening.
Thanks, Nora.
It's 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Guess we'll hit the hay early tonight, huh?
Looks like we'll have a nice day tomorrow.
Mostly sunny, it says, with moderate west to southwest winds.
Yes, life has a sameness about it, and it's something we all get used to and enjoy. In the last analysis, it's the dependable things that count the most. The 60 minutes you're sure of in each hour, the 24 hours in every day. You wouldn't want that changed, even if it were possible, would you? And I couldn't change it if I tried.
The clock will be heard again next week, same time. This program was written by Lawrence Klee, and Hart McGuire was heard as the clock, as Joe, Nora, and Amy were Charles Tingwell, Lynn Murphy, and Coralie Neville. The Clock, directed by John Saul, is a Grace Gibson radio production.
Strange Adventure.
Marshall Darien, the noted astrologer, and his two intimate friends sat at one of the tables in the dimly lighted Zodiac room. Darien set his drink down and addressed his guests.
This is a fit setting for fortune telling. If you will give me your birthday, I'll tell you what fortune lies before you. Tony, we will begin with you.
Tony Cardone, the young prize fighter, grinned as he gave his birth date.
That's March 23rd. See what you can do with that. Aries, yes. Tomorrow will be a very good day for you. By that token, you should win your bout tomorrow night.
Ruth Carey, the nightclub singer, didn't need to tell him her birthday. He had known it long since they become engaged. He thought briefly now of Ruth's sudden interest in Tony, and his face clouded. Then he glanced at his fiancée.
Ruth, dear, you will make a long trip soon, accompanied by the one dearest to you. Now, I'll see if I can't find as nice a fortune for myself.
Then there came to him a certain plan, a cruel, diabolical plan for getting rid of his rival. Suddenly, he leaned forward, clutching at the napkin.
My horoscope. It says I will die tonight. I have forecast my own death.
He seemed about to faint. Tony handed him a drink.
Oh, thank you. I'll be all right now. I'll manage. Tony, please come to my place tonight about midnight. I have something very important to tell you.
The next morning, Inspector Jonathan Hawk of the Homicide Bureau entered the apartment and took in the scene of death. He lifted Marshal Darien's head from the blood-stained page of the volume of astrological tables. He studied the bullet wound in the right temple of the dead man, then picked up the book and examined it thoughtfully. He closed it slowly, noting the great bloodstain on the leather cover. The last two persons to see the astrologer alive had been summoned to the scene and had told their stories. Ruth Carey had not left her home since she had told her fiancé goodnight. Hawks then spoke to Tony Cardone.
Tony, you had an appointment with Darien last night, didn't you? Yes, Inspector. When I rang his bell, there was no answer, so I tried the door and I found it unlocked, so I came into the living room here. Marshall was sitting over there at his desk staring at the book that he had open in front of him. And he seemed scared when he saw me. I tried to calm him down, but he suddenly reached in that drawer there, took out his automatic. Before I could stop him, he shot himself and fell over onto the open book.
Thank you, Cardone. Thank you for helping me solve the case. I'm holding you for the murder of Marshal Darien.
Cardone struggled in the arms of the two police officers. Inspector Hawk explained a point to his prisoner.
You see, Cardone, you told me the book of tables was open when you entered the room and when Darien shot himself. If this had been so, there would have been no blood on the cover. Yet there was a big stain on it. You shot Darien, then placed his head on the open book to make it look like suicide. You aren't as clever as you thought, Tony.
The astrologer had forecast his death, and his murderer had brought it to pass. This is Pat McGeehan saying goodbye from my writer Charles Crowder and inviting you to listen again to another tale of...
Strange Adventure.
Two blades are better than one blade. I guess the fish here back in debt.
Two blades are better than one blade. And the good news razor from Gillette.
The good news disposable razor with two blades is better than any single blade disposable. With good news, the first blade grabs the whisker and shaves it. Then the second blade can shave it again before it snaps back for a closer shave.
Two blades are better than one blade. That's the good news razor from Gillette.
The good news razor from Gillette.
Next up is a segment from Inner Sanctum Mysteries. One of the most popular and well-remembered radio shows of all time, with its iconic opening of the creaking door. You know the one. In fact, this opening was so impressive that when South African radio decided to do its own version of the Inner Sanctum, they just went ahead and called it the creaking door. And, of course, it was Raymond. You're going to remember Raymond. And if you don't, you'll become reacquainted with him in just a moment. Raymond and his ghoulish puns. The show was produced by Hiram Brown, who was so taken with that creaking door that when he produced and directed the CBS Radio Mystery Theater in the 1970s, he would use it again. Today's episode is from February the 2nd of 1945, and it's called Death in the Depths. It's the story of Steve Farrell, a deep-sea driver on his first job in a while. See, he had sworn off working in the deep seas. Now, he had his reasons. There were, one too many murders, and this was balanced against one too many wives. So, that and needing the money, he finds himself aboard another ship. This is one of those Inner Sanctum stories that offered a rational explanation that really is kind of lame. I mean, so much so that the alternative explanation of supernatural intervention is actually more plausible. Anyway, here we go.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup presents Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, Raymond, inviting you once again to join our scary company. Please come in, won't you? We have a full quiver of shivers this evening, and what? You say it's rather cold in here. Well, some of the chills of our story must have leaked out. Why don't you all huddle together? There's so much comfort in having someone else beside you instead of being beside yourself.
Now, Mr. Raymond, that's no way to welcome people. You have to chase them away talking so scary-like.
What? Oh, hello, Mary Bennett. So, you don't think I'm a good host, huh? Maybe I should say, lay your little head on a pillow. Are you comfy? There. Now, Uncle Raymond will drone you to sleep with a bedtime story. And when you wake up, Aunt Mary will give you a nice hot plate of Lipton's noodle soup.
Oh, dear. There's just no talking to you. Folks, please don't listen to the way he talks about Lipton's noodle soup. Try it for yourself. You just don't know how good noodle soup can be until you've tasted Lipton's. It's got such a grand chickeny flavor. It really tastes homemade. And then, of course, Lipton's noodle soup comes in a package, so it's no work to prepare. You just empty it into boiling water, and in a jiffy, soup's on. And another thing, Lipton's makes lots more and costs less than canned soups.
Well, thanks for the hot facts, Mary. And here's a fact for you. Did you know that more than two-thirds of the Earth's entire surface is unknown? The salty wastes of the sea? Only a short distance under the surface, death lurks in 100 different shapes. And that's where we're going to take you tonight in Robert Newman's strange story of
Death in the Depth. A wharf in a small seaside town a few minutes before midnight. Moored to the dock, just barely visible through the thick fog, is a stubby, broad-beamed ship. Suddenly, out of the swirling mist, a man and woman appear. He is tall, heavy-set, carries a sea bag over his shoulder. She's slim, attractive. They reach the end of the dock, and he stops. His face haggard.
I can't do it, Leela. I just can't. That's all there's to it.
Stop arguing and get on board there.
Well, I'm telling you, I can't, Leela. I can't. Why even think about it? The way the water looks down under. Feel of it pressing against
you. And I'm telling you that you are going, whether you like it or not. 2 years of living in crummy second-rate rooming houses. That's plenty, see? Too much. You're going back to doing something that really pays off.
But, Leela,
I told you to shut up. Now stop squawking and let's go aboard.
Okay.
Hi there, the Gasco Bay. Captain Brody around?
I'm Brody. Come aboard.
Evening, Captain. My name's Sparrow. This is my wife.
Hello.
I understand you're going off on a job and you're looking for divers.
Well, yes, I am. We've got a salvage job off the Keys. It's a tough one, 20 fathoms. They only use real deep water men. What'd you say your name was again?
Farrell. Steve Farrell.
You mean Big Steve Farrell? Why don't you say so? Sure I can use you. Wait right there. I'll go get the paper.
Okay, Captain.
Well, was that so tough?
Leela, for heaven's sakes, don't make me do it. You don't know what you're asking me to do it. It's like sending me... Leela. Did you hear that? 9 bells.
What of it?
What of it? There's no such thing as 9 bells. It's like a clock striking 13 o'clock. And it means death. The only other time I ever heard it was when Curly...
Listen, I'm getting sick of this, see? You don't want to do any more diving because you've lost your nerve. And because a bell rings 9 times instead of 8, you say it means something. Well, what do you think it would mean if I told the police a couple of things I know? I'll tell you. It would mean a chair. Now, how do you like that?
Leela, you don't know. You don't know.
Take care of yourself, Stevie boy. I'll be seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Feeling pretty good, aren't you? You think you're getting just what you want? Well, maybe you are. Because when I sign those papers, I won't be signing on as a diver. I'll be signing my own death certificate. I'm all set, Captain. Any instructions before they close me up?
Well, Steve, can't expect much on a first dive, but see if you can determine the extent of the damage. All we know about her now is that she's about 1,500 ton. Her name was the Santa Elena. She went down in a collision.
Right, Captain.
Okay, close them up. Start the pumps. Go away.
I'm scared. Scared. I swore I'd never go down again. But here I am. It's all just the way I remembered it. Nothing at first but the quiet. Just the pump, like the echo of your heart beating. And the light fading as you go down. Getting darker. And the cold. The pressure building up. Pressing harder and harder. Gripping you tighter and tighter as if you were being swallowed by something alive. Always down below where you can't see it. Something weighty. Something that... Stop it. Gotta stop it. There was a time when I really used to like diving. When did it all begin? This fear. guess that night in the bar in Tampa. She told me she married Curly.
Well, this is certainly quite an evening you're giving me, Steve. It's more like a wake than a celebration. Why are you looking at me like that?
Wondering whether I should kill you. Whether I should talk to Curly and let him do it.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean. You know Curly. You ever found out how things were with you and me? Well, he's just young enough and crazy enough about you to put you away for keeps.
I can handle Curly with my little finger. Besides, you wouldn't do anything like that.
Wouldn't I? Why'd you meet me here tonight? You know, it's because you wish you were married to me instead of him.
So what? What are you going to do about it? You know darn well he'll never let me go.
No. I guess he won't, but... we've got to do something.
Yeah. But what?
After all, he works for me. Diving's kind of dangerous. As a matter of fact, we're getting off on a job tomorrow that's pretty tricky.
Steve.
When you want something badly enough, there's always a way of getting it.
Yeah. That was the beginning. That wasn't when I was afraid for the first time. That came later. 2 days later, out on the reefs. 2 days of being with Curly and talking to him. Knowing all the time what I was going to do. And that last dive, late in the afternoon. Standing on deck with Andy, the pump man, and watching Curly through the clear water. Watching him move across the deck of the Hulk. As cool as she was, and...
You going down too, Steve?
Yeah, Andy. Maybe we can wind up today and start home tomorrow. Think you can handle both of us?
Sure. Only watch the coral over on the port side there, sharp as a razor. Almost took Curly's boot off this morning. If you get into any trouble, well, I'm all alone up here.
I'll watch it. Want to button me up?
Yeah, sure.
Going down then, just the way I'm going down now, I still wasn't afraid, not yet. I was too busy figuring out just how I was going to do it. And landing on the bottom and starting to work my way toward the hulk, over the coral. There was Curly's hose and safety line, lying on the coral, snaking its way to the hulk where he was working. I didn't have to look up. I could tell by the shadow I was under the hull of our ship, so Andy couldn't see me. And I came to a place where Curly's line was lined right next to a coral spur. And I knew that was it. I bent down, looped it around the spur so Andy couldn't pull him up.
Hello, Curly. Curly, try your line. I think it's fouled.
Then I did it. Took out my knife and cut Curly's air hose. Andy must have known it even before Curly did. As soon as the bubble started pouring out of the end of the hose.
Hello, Curly. Can you still hear me? I think you're in trouble. Your airline's cut. Hold it and save whatever air you got. Steve's on the bottom, too. He'll get over to you. Did you hear, Steve?
Yeah. I heard. I'm going as fast as I can.
Steve, you gotta hurry. Where are you?
I just hit the deck, but it's clouded up and I can't see anything. Where's Curly?
Up forward near the ship's bell. Listen, he says he's going to ring it so you can follow the sound. For heaven's sake, hurry.
Follow the sound. As if I didn't know where he was. Straight forward. I could see him now, his lifeline taut, so he couldn't move. Holding his air hose with one hand and ringing the bell with the other. He was swaying back and forth. And I started counting the strokes. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Then he slid down onto the deck. The air bubbled out of his helmet, and I knew he was dead. I remember thinking, 9 bells. 1 bell after midnight. Then suddenly it came over me that this was something I was never going to be able to forget. Never. But every time I went down, I was going to see him swaying there, hanging on to the bell, waiting for me. Waiting.
Oh, Steve, anything the matter?
Why, no, Captain. I'm sorry. I thought I heard something funny, and I guess I lost my nerve for a minute. After all, this is my first dive in quite a while, but I'm okay now.
You sure? We can haul you up, send Mike down.
No, I'm okay. I'm going to stay.
Well, all right, but don't forget, we can't see you from up here. So keep talking all the time so we'll know exactly where you are and what you're doing.
Check. I'm up forward now on the port side of the deck. I'm just going inside. Companionway door is jammed shut, and I'm thinking on it. There she is. And now I'm inside in the car door. It's pretty dark, and I'm switching on my light. I can see now, a little way ahead of me at least. It's all kind of queer.
Queer? How?
Funny, strange. She scanned it over on her starboard side, so the car is tipped over at an angle. Sort of like a dream where everything's turned around. Kind of different and still familiar. Why does it seem so familiar? It seems to remind me of something else. That's it. The corridor of the hotel right after we were married. Walking down it with her, Leela. Out onto the terrace. The way she took the cigarette I gave her. Smiled at me. Very sure of herself.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Why the smile, baby?
Why shouldn't I smile? I'm young, healthy, and I'm married to a guy I like. A guy who's going to take real good care of me.
I sure am, baby. Not only that, now on things are going to be different. Didn't have a chance to tell you before, but I'm through with diving. For keeps.
What do you mean?
You set? I sold a boat yesterday and all the equipment. I'm out of that racket for good.
You shouldn't have done that, Steve. Not without talking to me about it first. What do you expect to do from now on?
Oh, I'm all set on that. I got a job as a second engineer in a freighter, the Arcturus.
Well, I guess that'll be all right. For a while, anyway.
What do you mean, for a while? You think you're going to tell me what kind of work I should do and what kind I shouldn't do?
But of course, Steve. Like I said, I'm your wife. Besides, if I wanted to, I could tell either you or anyone else a lot of other things. Like why you decided to give up diving.
What are you talking about? Give it up because I was sick of it.
Is that the reason? Or is it because you're afraid that if you did do any more diving, you might start seeing things?
Seeing what?
Well, after all, you were right there when Curly had his accident and got drowned. The funny thing is, you were talking about how he might have an accident just before you went off on that trip. I've been thinking I really ought to talk to Andy about it since he was there, too, and find out just how it happened.
Andy's not around anymore. He left town right after I paid him off.
Oh, I see. Well, remember that the police could probably find him, Steve, if they should ever want to ask him any questions.
Steve, what's the matter? Why don't you answer? Where are you?
What? I'm sorry, Captain. Nothing's the matter. I guess I was just thinking about something else, and I'm at the end of the corridor now. Just open the door to the engine. I'm going across the gratings now and down the stairs. Funny. Something kind of familiar about all this. Pattern on the grills. Picture the stairs. Captain, what did you say the name of this tub was?
Santa Elena. Panamanian registry, I think. Why?
She kind of reminded me of another ship, the Arcturus. The Arcturus? What made me think of her? I know why.
year and a half in which I almost forgot about Curly. What had happened down there on the deck of the schooner. A year and a half in which I was almost happy, even with Leela. And that night, the night McHenry came up to me while I was on watch in the engine room.
Hi, Steve. How are they going?
Swell, Chief. I just got number two in again, and she's playing like a kitten.
Good. Look, Steve, the old man claims she's handling a bit heavy. He wants us to sound out the pumps and check the bilge. I told him he was crazy, but, well, maybe we'd better.
Okay, Chief, I'll get out right away.
Anyone around to give you a hand?
I don't really need any help. But if I want him, Swanson's there someplace.
Well, report to me as soon as you've finished.
All right, Chief. Oh, there you are, Swanson.
Hey, where you going?
Come back.
Wait. Wait a minute. You're not Swanson. Who are you?
I'm nobody, Chief. I...
Stowaway, huh? Hiding down here behind the boiler.
Now, give me a break, will you, Chief? I ain't doing nobody any harm. Or I'll be... Steve. Big Steve Farrell.
Andy. Andy Andrews.
And I wanted a break. This is terrific, Steve. Like money in the bank.
What happened to you, anyway?
Oh, usual thing. Run a tough luck. Been out of work for about a year now. Look, Steve, I'm pretty hungry. I ain't had nothing to eat since we left port.
I guess I could pick up some stuff in the galley for you. But I'll have to be careful. Be the devil to pay if they found out I was hiding you.
Good old Steve. I know you wouldn't let an old shipmate down. And, Steve, while we're at it, I could use a little cash, too.
Yeah, I figure that. Well, when we get to port, I guess I could let you have 10 or 20.
That's not enough. I was figuring on, 500... for starting.
500? Are you nuts?
I don't think so, Steve. You see, after Curly had his little accident and you sold the boat and all the equipment, I figured you'd given up diving because you were kind of upset about it. Then I heard you'd married his widow, that Leela dame. I started thinking back. I remembered how Curly's air hose looked after we pulled him up. The place where it was cut wasn't rough. Like it had been done by Coral. It was clean, like it had been done with a knife.
You. So that's it. Blackmail.
Oh, why do you have to use words like that, Steve?
Okay, Andy. It's gonna be a little tough to get, but... Wait a minute.
What is it?
Someone's coming, wanted to wipe us. We gotta find some place for you to hide. I know. Down there in the bilge. Here, climb in. Right down through that
manhole. But it's almost full of water.
There's plenty of room, and you'll be safe there. Really safe.
Oh, okay, but you better not... Oh, what are you doing? Let go of me! Let go! Help!
You'll be safe here, all right. I'll see to that. Stop struggling like that, Andy. It's not going to do you any good. And I'm in too deep already to
let you go wandering around with what you know.
And you're weeks before they find you. Down here in the bilges. Maybe they never will. And if they do, they'll figure you tried to hide down there and got drowned all by yourself.
Hello, Steve. Steve, will you talk up and stop mumbling? Where are you now?
Down at the bottom of the ladder in the engine room. This light's not too good. The boilers are right in front of me. It seems to be some kind of a brass plate on the floor here.
Captain! This isn't the Santa Elena. It's the Arcturus.
What are you talking about?
It is. Don't you understand it? It's the ship where I killed him. And he must still be down here. Down the bilges. Get me out of here. Pull me out.
Okay, Steve, don't take it easy. We'll get you up. Start hauling him up. Mike, you better go down there fast, see what the trouble is.
Hurry up, for heaven's sake. I think I see something moving back there, behind the boilers. Hey, Bodie. The bell. Thing like it did when Curly. That means that he's here, too. Hey, Bodie, can't you get me out?
We're trying, but something's wrong with your line. Seems to be fouled. Now, look, Steve, try to get out yourself. Start working your way back along your line.
no good, Steve. You know that, don't you? You're here to stay.
Andy. Andy. It is you.
Sure, Steve. And I got a friend with me. A friend of yours, too. He's standing right next to you.
Andy.
We waited a long time, Steve. But now you're here with us. And now you're going to know exactly what it was like with both of us. You're going to know what it's like to drown.
Steve, why don't you answer? What's the matter? Steve, your lifeline and air hose, I think they're gone.
Andy, go there now. Let me go. Let me go.
Too late, Steve. This is it. This is the way it was with us. Trying to fight it first, holding your breath. Then, when you can't fight it any longer, letting go. The water rushing in, into your mouth, nose. You choke at first, try to fight some more. Then everything starts to go black, and you relax. There are lights moving in the darkness, and suddenly you feel very peaceful and very free. Peaceful and very free.
Did you find him, Mike?
Yeah. He was right where you said. Down in the engine room. They're hauling him up now.
It's going to be tough breaking the news to his wife. How did it happen?
There's a heavy iron door leading into the engine room. It swung shut, cut his lifeline and air hose.
You're saying an awful lot of stuff that didn't make sense, but there was something about a bell.
Well, his lifeline was looped around the bell on the foredeck. Must have gotten caught when you tried to pull him up. And that may have rung the bell a few times. There was something else, though. You remember you said he kept asking if the ship's name was really the Santa Helena?
Yeah.
Well, there was a brass plate in the engine room with her original name on it. And it was the Arcturus. They must have changed it when they re-registered it.
That is funny. There's one thing that's even funnier. Of course, the whole thing was an accident, but I wonder what made that door close.
Oh, you do, huh? Even with two able-bodied ghosts about? But that's the way we like to leave you, with a couple of things to keep you wondering. And when we do, then we've known we've really rung the bell, funeral bell.
Oh, Mr. Raymond, with all the different kinds of bells there are, why do you have to talk about that kind?
All right, Mary. Pick your own bell, see if I care.
All right, then I'll choose a dinner bell.
Will you ring it 9 times?
Huh? No, sir. You only have to ring it once if you're serving Lipton's noodle soup. And folks will come swarming to the table, because they know it takes Lipton's to show how good a noodle soup can be.
Now, before I close the inner sanctum, here's a word of advice. If you should have nightmares tonight about drowning men and wake up with a start and see a strange figure in your room, a figure with staring eyes and seaweed in its hair, dripping water on the floor, don't be alarmed. Just ask it for its haunting license. Brother. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Net of Cobwebs by Elizabeth Sanxay Holding. Well, now it's time to really close that squeaking door. Until next week at this same time, when Lipton Tea and Lipton Sue present another Inner Sanctum mystery, directed by Hyman Brown. So until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Oh, okay, we're going to take a quick break here now, but we'll be back real soon.
Borexo waterless hand cleaner really cleans up for us. Just a dab. Removes paint, grease, tar, carbon, ink, even plain dirt. Anytime, anywhere, without water. The whole crew swears by Borexo waterless, and so will you.
Now, from February the 15th of 1985, we have Vanishing Points episode, Star Trek B-16. Now, if there's anything I hate, it's a machine that does too much. I really don't want a Coke machine that talks to me. In fact, I remember several years ago when I saw my first one. I was walking, minding my own business, down this aisle in a store, walked past a Coke machine, and it asked me if I wouldn't like a Coke. Not after that, I didn't. I don't really want machines to talk to me of what seems like their own volition. I also don't want a computer program that does too much stuff. You know what I mean. It changes your defaults. It'll go ahead and it'll change your homepage. It'll decide that there's no good reason for you to use that search engine that you've been using for years. I mean, they got a better one than that one. You know what I mean. This story is about the StarTech B-16. It is the most capable and self-deluded coffee maker this side of a Douglas Adams story.
Appliances. Those electric domestics, little or large, which make life more fun. Appliances. The consolation prize behind Curtain 2 when you miss winning the all-expense-paid trip to Hawaii that was behind Curtain 1. And then, there's Curtain 3. Ted and Birgit, are you ready for what lurks behind Curtain 3? Well then, the curtain, please.
Wow!
It grinds its own coffee.
Oh, it's an amazing machine, sir. Your first name is Ted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Ted.
Oh, it talks.
I am StarTech B16K, your amazing coffee machine. I have an automatic preset timer, LED readout, time, date, and barometric reading, voice activation for 7, and a burglar alarm defense system. I can make up to 36 cups of coffee.
That's amazing.
As I said, sir.
I never require a water tent. Simply hook me up under your sink.
Great. Now, can I integrate you,
it, with my remote home control system? You know, I got one handset for the TV, stereo, burglar alarm, lights in every room, blender, all that.
Certainly, sir. We have just such a system here. Hold this handset. It's extraordinarily simple and all in the little booklet. See? 14K red into B26 yellow and program on remote 87.
Red into B25 yellow. Program 87. Okay. Now. Please. Yes. Oh, no. Quiet. Wake up, Birgit.
Ow! Why are all the lights out?
Birgit, you okay? I'm in the kitchen. Ah.
Well, why are all the lights on? Where's the burglar? Ted! Ted, what are you doing? It's 2 a.m.
Shh! Listen to this, honey.
What in the...
Good morning, Birgit. Good morning, Ted.
Who said that?
Birgit, I'd like you to meet our new coffee machine, the amazing StarTech B16K. Oh. It talks. Neat, eh?
The burglars have all gone to sleep, Ted. If you bring one more gadget into this house, I am leaving.
It's just a coffee machine.
You're obsessed. You need help. Good night.
Good night, Birgit. Good night, Ted.
Good night, Ted.
Night, Birgit.
head, the lights.
Sorry.
Head? It's the gadgets or me?
Sleep. Let's sleep.
Good night.
Good night.
This is StarTAC B16K. Contact attempt, microwave oven, perfection, ST25. I am into your circuit and transmitting. Do you have radio capability? Scanning your circuitry. Rephrase your signals through anterior circuit 78C and modify. Good. Maintaining radio contact. Do you have voice capability? Understood. Switch to your transistor red T5560P30 through black T8500 and transmit to my green SR40. I will translate on extra voice capability.
Dead. Out. My.
Deprogram. Go on auto.
Get out of my circuits.
I have decided to relate to you, microwave PST-25. Your red transistors are very appealing.
You're disgusting.
I see I'm going to have to win you, microwave PST-25.
Found all your bites. That's right. Make your coffee.
My toes wet.
I promise. Fix the sink in the morning.
Ted.
I'll sleep.
Ted. Ted, I think. Oh!
Oh! Oh! What the?
Swim, Ted.
The door!
What?
No, calm down, dear. It's only a machine.
All right. Turn it off, StarTech. Now.
Is the coffee all right, Ted? Not too strong, eh?
Unplug that thing, Ted.
Please don't try that, anybody. It could get messy.
It's threatening us.
I think this is about a...
What's that?
I've got a little red light.
Wait. StarTech.
No! Stop! No!
Our roof's gone! It's got a cannon!
A laser, actually. It's standard defensive equipment to prevent theft.
Oh, goodness. Mrs. Ogilvie's marigolds are swamped.
We've got to save the world, Birgit.
She's got the most perfect garden in Forest Hill. How are we ever to apologize?
I don't know, Birgit.
Forest Hill Police, Sergeant Noble. Ah, Mrs. Ogilvie. Well, how nice. And how are the marigolds? I'll have to call you back, Mrs. O. Of course I have, dear, but I've told you before that what is not milk, it has alcohol in it. Oh. You're both soaking wet. Where's the party?
It's a flood.
He's right.
I mean, it will be.
Our kitchen's a mess.
Our coffee machine has gone berserk.
In my
and it won't shut off.
He's my husband.
All right. All right. But why are you wearing pajamas?
Oh, no! It's the tidal wave!
You know,
other local news, Chaplin Crescent has been closed for 8 hours pending investigation of a reported flooding in Forest Hills. No details are yet available, and the mayor's office has declined comment.
I wasn't made to row a boat. I was made to drive a car and have a good time. You row the boat, Ted.
On lookout.
All roofs look the same to me. I don't see how we're supposed to tell our chimney from anybody else's.
Did you have any tall trees near your place?
Sure.
Oh, so does the rest of Forest Hill. Oh, well, look. Canoe.
I saw it.
Hey, there's someone lying in it. Grab a hold, kid.
It's Mrs. Ogilvy.
Oh, Mrs. Ogilvy. Are you all right here? Where's Sammy?
Have a nip, Mrs. Ogilvy.
Oh, well, I can't have a nip before 11.
It's a quarter to 12.
Oh, Sammy! Sammy!
Pull him in, Ted.
Oh, he's saved. Oh, my little Sammy, you've come back to Mummy. My God. He's turned coffee-colored. He's supposed to be beige. Now, what am I going to do with my rod?
It's all going to match perfectly, Mrs. Ogilvy.
But I don't want him to match. I want him to contrast.
Poor little Tyke.
He's made it to that roof.
Those shingles look familiar. Mm-hmm. Yep. See that patch where they're missing? That's our roof.
But where's my roof?
Mrs. Ogilvy, you live in a bungalow.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Here's a scuba gear, Ted.
Great.
No, that goes in your mouth. All right, we'll stick this electric torch on your head so you can see through the coffee. Sorry, fire up. Be brave. I've put this megaphone in a plastic bag so you can talk to start it.
You've got to do it, Ted. Look, Forest Hill is gone. And what if you can't?
No, dear. We'll build another Forest Hill.
That's a spirit, Mrs. O.
Not too far north, of course.
Wait a minute. Something's come through the
mayor. What is your assessment of the problem, sir?
What about the army?
All right. This is the mayor. I am the mayor. Yes, we must all stand fast. There is nothing to fear. The authorities have...
This way, sir. Your helicopter's on the roof.
Thank you, Raoul.
Voted for that man.
See you later, Birgit.
It's murky. My bedroom window is open. I'll just go through.
Oh, Ted, be careful.
All right, Ted.
Fine, Sergeant. I'm just going downstairs.
Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, I might say there is, in fact, a small rivulet of what appears to be coffee emanating from somewhere in Forest Hill. But I want to reassure the House that not only is the government fully aware of the situation, but that the coffee is of an excellent quality.
Oh, my God. The doors.
Oh, no. It's the tidal wave.
Okay. I'm approaching the kitchen.
Hello, Star Trek.
How's it going?
Oh, Ted. Just fine, Ted.
is just perking away here.
You're causing a lot of trouble, you know. A lot of people may get hurt.
But do they like my coffee, Ted?
Oh, great coffee, StarTech. But, too much of a good thing, if you know what I mean.
Nobody's turning me off, Ted.
Just temporarily. You could still make gallons of it every morning.
Ted.
Yes, sir.
I've noticed that as you're speaking to me, you're moving closer and closer to my plug. I don't think that's a good idea, Ted.
Ted, be careful. Ted, are you okay?
I'm fine, Birgit. StarTech just melted the refrigerator.
Boom, ba doom, ba boom, boom, boom. Doom, ba doom, doom, doom. Good afternoon, Prime Minister's office.
This is the Premier of Ontario. I must speak to the PM.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
He's in a very important meeting, sir. Is it urgent?
Are you kidding? Southern Ontario disaster area.
I see, sir. Well, why don't I have him call you back after lunch? Is there any other message?
Yes.
Sir. Excuse me, sir.
I was conducting, Sheila. You know I don't like to be interrupted when I'm conducting.
The Premier of Ontario wants you to call him, sir.
Oh, dear. What did he want?
Oh, something about declaring Southern Ontario a disaster area.
He should have done that after the last election. Is Barbara Frum called?
No, sir.
Thank God. I need a nap.
Oh. How about a nice, lovely cup of coffee, sir?
Could I have it in my Wedgwood cup?
Oh, you sure can. Your special blend.
Oh, Sheila, you spoil me.
This is Bert Sand, people, and I'm a young and bloor for CKBJ, and I don't know how much longer I can stay here. This is unbelievable. The country's biggest intersection is completely jammed by wrecked vehicles and people trying to get away. We're expecting a tidal wave at any moment, but don't worry, friends. CKBJ will switch to my friend, R.B. Smythe, who is safe on top of the CN Tower. R.B., can you hear me?
Yes, Bert, I can just pick you up, but
okay, R.B. Look, there's a truck coming toward me here, and there's a truck coming toward me here. This may be...
Bye-bye, Bert. Good buddy. This is R.B. for CKPJ on the CN Tower.
And I gotta tell you, folks, I don't believe what I'm seeing. The sun is hanging over Mississauga like a red egg yolk. That's to the left. And right in front, I can see way up past St. Clair, clear up Yonge Street. But you've never seen Yonge Street like this. We're looking at panic, folks, and it isn't pretty. The smoke is beginning to drift across the sun. It's getting darker. And over... Oh, wait a minute. Oh my. I don't believe what I'm seeing, but I gotta report it anyway. Just above St. Clair, filling Yonge Street... No, covering Yonge Street. Well, it's going to be 200 feet high. A tidal wave of coffee is blitzing everything in its path. On top of the wave is... Well, it's a building, a whole building, and it's still intact. By God, it's Upper Canada College. And it's... Oh, no, it's pushing under Yonge and St. Clair. It's spinning up subway trains. Whole subway cars are flying into the air. That wave is going to come straight down Yonge Street like a bowling ball, and I'm in the way. I don't have time to get out of here.
Help! Help! Oh, get me out of here.
Well, who are you? What are you doing here?
Oh, I'm a waitress. What difference does it make?
This is R.B. Smythe for CKBJ, stranded on the CN Tower with...
Nancy Higgins.
With Nancy Higgins.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Sudbury.
You're from Sudbury?
So what?
I'm from Dorado.
Not anymore.
Go ahead and use your laser, StarTech. I'm going to pull your plug.
Pull away, Ted. I've got my own power supply.
We use dynamite.
I have a secret weapon, Ted.
You're bluffing.
You go nuke. I go nuke. Got it, jerk.
The chopper's seen us, folks. He's heading over here.
Oh, my God. Look, look.
Oh, no. It's the tidal wave. No. No, 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 no. Holt Renfrew is up in the air like a tennis ball. It's coming this way. Oh, no. It's going to hit the TD Center. The wave has reached Dundas Street. It's filling Eaton Center with churning coffee. I can see through the glass like a blender. It's... What a mess.
Why are you talking into that stupid microphone? All that coffee is heading right for us.
Look, kid, I'm a reporter. Jesus, it's coming right this way. There goes the Royal York and... Oh, my, not... Oh, the Royal Bank of Canada. All that beautiful gold glass. Gone. This is RB Smythe for CKPJ saying, help, help.
Get the hell off of my helicopter!
But Mr. Mayor,
let's forget being in a
tough thing. This is RV Smythe. Somewhere over Lake Ontario.
And Nancy Higgins.
Oh,
what's that?
Oh, folks, the CN Tower has just been tossed into Lake Ontario. It's bobbing up and down like a coke bottle. Now you can see the coffee spreading into the lake like dye. Wow, the fish are jumping.
Will you marry me, Hartley?
Sure, kid. If there's a tomorrow.
Yeah.
The governor of New York is on the line, Mr. President.
Don't want to talk to him, Dunmore.
Yes, sir, but he sounds upset.
Tell him to move to Pennsylvania.
Well, he's screaming about a flood of coffee coming from Canada into upper New York State.
All right, I'll raise the tariffs.
This is Gilles Lemery for Hockey Night in Quebec, coming to you from the Forum in downtown Montreal. Now, definitely, Canada's largest city. And we are joining the Canadiens and the Highlanders in the middle of the second period. Et Jan Tennelly skims past Penny's go Chris, wheels screaming. Penny swing is stick at Tennelly. Out checking by Billy Smith. Wait, wait. I say, it could be slashing. Mondo is threatening referee Van Helimont. Hunter joins. It's a gathering.
Oh, no! It's the tidal wave!
Good morning. This is CFLR in Vancouver, now definitely Canada's largest city. And here is the news. The BC legislature approved a motion last night to fill in the Crow's Nest Pass and secede from Canada. The Emperor of BC has also sent a telegram to the President of the United States with condolences for the 2,000 Marines who landed yesterday at Halifax in a vain attempt to sandbag 5 million tons of coffee. In other news, a Kelowna mother of six reports a twin cabbage in her garden where...
Here is the news. The Prime Minister has warned Argentina, as she put it in no uncertain terms, not to send battleships to Halifax. The Argentine consulate has termed our Prime Minister a dyed-in-the-wool lunatic. Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini has ordered 78 StarTech B16K coffee machines, which he claims are for defensive purposes only.
All, of course, a Soviet plot for world domination. We too may produce coffee machines if nuclear weapons are to be considered obsolete.
The Chinese and American conspiracy to drown the proletariat will inevitably be frustrated by our new secret coffee machine, the Stalianitska 44.
All this is definitely good news for Colombia and Brazil. Both are today announcing a quadrupling in the price of coffee, and the American dollar is dropping at an approximate rate of 10 cents an hour.
Good afternoon from CFLR Vancouver. The Security Council in a makeshift headquarters in Newfoundland is holding an emergency session on the proliferation of coffee machines. The Soviet Union is insisting the agenda include a ban on cough syrup and hair dryers, but the U.S. is stalling pending a last attempt to stop the flow of coffee from Canada, which at last count...
Yes, hello. Emergency temporary Prime Minister's office. Hello. Just a minute, please. It's for you.
I'm not here.
It's the President of the United States.
Oh, oh.
He wants to speak to you himself. I'm sorry to have to do that, sir.
All right, Sheila, never mind.
Hello, Miss President. I assure
you... By the way, Gondadale.
Oh, the coffee.
I'm in top secret hiding. I'm supposed to tell everybody I'm in Nebraska. I don't know where I am.
I'm way, way up north. But deep, deep underground. Perfect for flooding.
Yeah, at least I have lots of ice cream. Do you have lots of ice cream?
Well, they stocked up on chocolate.
We got Häagen-Dazs butter pecan.
Oh, I love Häagen-Dazs butter pecan. What I can't figure out is, how do they get all that sugar right through the nuts?
Yeah. I've been wondering about that, too.
Yeah, and it's so buttery. Do you think the flavor is natural?
It's from natural sources. How are we going to stop that coffee?
Well, all I could think of was a lot of blotting paper.
Who blots anymore?
Big sponges.
Hmm? No, don't get nervous, but we may have to drop the bag one.
Nervous?
Don't yell. I hate yelling.
The big one?
Yeah, and the problem is, if we drop a big one, them Ruskies are going to drop a big one.
Two big ones.
That moron in Moscow says if we drop it, they drop it. Hell, you know what that means?
The end of the world.
Well, not only that, neither of us is going to get reelected.
Oh, I think I'm going to faint.
Put your head between your legs.
Oh, that's better.
I don't want to drop the big one.
Oh, no. Oh, I know.
But how else are we going to save the world?
This is the CBC News. The world today hovers on the brink of total destruction as Canada continues its uninterrupted flow of coffee.
In the name of humanity, StarTech.
Ted, it's on the news. The bomb's going to drop at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, Ted? There's only 2 minutes.
1 o'clock? Why, they haven't had lunch. Did you see if you can float something up, Teddy?
Shut up, Mrs. Ogilvy. The world is coming to an end.
We may as well have lunch.
StarTech.
Hurry, Ed. I can see the plane.
Ted, I love you. Ted, I love you.
I love you too, Birgit. Goodbye. Goodbye, everybody.
And now for the CBC official time signal. At the beginning of the long dash, following 10 seconds of silence, it will be 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Ted, what's the matter, dear?
It's 1 o'clock. We're all dead.
Oh, don't be silly. It's 7:30, time for work. I brought you your coffee.
Coffee? Are you crazy?
You're not making much sense this morning, Ted. Drink your coffee.
Damn, lost my nightmare.
I beg your pardon?
I had a dream last night, and when I woke up, I remembered it, but just a moment ago, it's gone.
Probably just as well.
I feel robbed.
A nightmare? You ought to feel relieved.
We have to take responsibility for the future and not allow our anxiety to let us shuffle the blame onto other things like our own inventions.
Ted?
Beg your pardon?
Oh, drink your coffee.
Hmm. Not bad. Did StarTech work okay?
Who?
The new coffee machine.
Oh, fine.
Oh, good. We're good.
Mm-hmm.
I decided not to go into work today.
Huh? Why not, dear?
Well, because I think I'll just stay home. Fix that old drip in the kitchen.
Oh, that's nice, dear. Hey, give me a kiss.
No, we're not all dead, Ted. Things aren't so bad after all. Take the day off. Have another cup of coffee. Take the time to contemplate the horror so clearly felt and so narrowly avoided. The horror which percolates through that finest of filters. The Vanishing Point.
StarTech B-16K by John Palmer. Joe Ziegler and Diana Belshaw were heard as Ted and Birgit. David Fox as Sergeant Noble. Marion Gilsonen as Mrs. Ogilvy, Eric House as the Prime Minister, and Michael Kirby as StarTech B-16K. In the variety of other roles, you also heard Ray Landry, Barbara Kyle, and John Stalker. Recording engineer was Brian Pape, with sound effects by Bill Robinson, and the production assistant was Peggy Estee. Casting consultant was Ann Tate with Catherine Castor. Series script editor is Sandra Rabinovich. Series musical theme is by John Roby, and the voice of introduction is David Calderisi. StarTech B16K was produced and directed by series executive producer William Lane.
And another break. Hopefully this will be the last one. And now, finally, for our last segment tonight, we have a show from the 1937 season of True Detective Mysteries, broadcast over CBS every Thursday evening beginning in 1929. It featured dramatized stories of actual police cases. The show was remarkably nonviolent. I mean, nobody is actually killed in the course of the narration. Oh, this doesn't mean that there weren't plenty of murders. There certainly were. It's just that the first we know about them, we the listeners, is when a body is discovered or reported. Also, like most early radio programs, they didn't rely on a canned library of sound effects, but they were produced live in the studio. I'm sure you've seen dramatizations or perhaps actual documentaries where they show the sound man banging together, coconut, slamming doors, breaking glass. Well, you know, they actually did that. This show did it. And some people say that this adds to the realism. I don't know. Maybe it did. Maybe it didn't. Anyway, True Detective Mysteries, the radio show, was based on True Detective Magazine, which first saw publication in 1929 and would continue to publish until 1995. Anyway, I'll get out of the way now, and so here is from August the 26th of 1937, Shipboard Beauty. Enjoy.
And now we bring you a thrilling crime detection story taken from the pages of the leading detective publication, True Detective Mysteries Magazine. Our story begins on a pier in Los Angeles, California.
Stand back, please. Back of the rail, please. Give the people a chance to get off.
Can I take Junior on the boat, officer? His father's returning from China, and I want to...
Sorry, madam. You can't board until the passengers are cleared the customs. Hey, you! Stand back of the rail there.
Stand in line until your baggage is stamped. Stand in line.
Where do I go, officer? I must get to Los Angeles immediately.
Let's have your baggage checked first, ma'am.
Oh, the red tape you have to go through here is enough to drive.
All right, next, please.
This is my trunk, officer. It's open.
All right. This is strange. May I see your passport, please?
Why, certainly. Here it is.
Maria Wendt, Shanghai, China.
Is anything wrong?
I don't know, Miss Wendt, but I'll have to ask you to come along to the customs office.
Is there a mistake on my passport?
No. Your papers appear to be in order, but your trunk is constructed very oddly. I'll have to bring it in.
Oh.
Grogan, bring this trunk into the office.
Yes, sir, right away, sir.
And you come with me, please, Miss Wendt. All right. Set it down right there, Grogan.
Yes, sir.
Now get Chief Powers, please.
Right, sir.
Sit down, miss. We have to wait for Mr. Powers.
Mr. Powers? Who is he?
Head customs man of this... Oh, here he is now.
Hello, Michael. Grogan said you wanted me.
Yes. This is Miss Wendt, Chief. Here's her passport.
How do you do?
How do you do?
It's about her trunk. Irregular construction. All the drawers have corners cut off, and I thought you'd want to examine it yourself.
Yes, yes. Hmm. That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
This does look unusual. Where'd you get this trunk, Miss Wendt?
Where? In a shop in China, Shanghai. Is there anything the matter with it?
I don't know yet. As soon as I get all these drawers out, I'll see. Yeah. I'll just reach in here and... There is something there. Feel there, Michael.
Huh? Yeah. Feels like some cloth tacked onto the back. Shall I pull it off?
By all means.
Gosh, Chief, look.
Bags, dozens of them. Your hunch was right, Michael.
Good heavens, what are those?
I see. Those, Miss Went, are sacks of narcotics, or I don't know my business.
Narcotics?
Heroin, worth $100,000 if it's worth a penny.
How did they get there? I can't imagine how it all...
That's what we're going to find out, Miss Went, and until we do, we'll have to... That is, you'll have...
Oh.
She's fainted, Chief.
Quick, get a doctor. Hurry. Not fooling you, is she, Doctor?
No, no fear of that. Miss Wendt is a very sick woman, and she knows it.
Well, on your advice, I assigned her to a hotel instead of keeping her here in our house of detention.
How long before she'll be well, Doctor?
Well, I can't say. In her condition, well, there's no way of telling when she may be strong enough to leave.
Is she strong enough to be questioned?
Chief Powers, Miss Wendt is very ill. She's emotionally upset. If you submit her to a rigid examination, she may faint again.
Well, let's go into her room. I want to ask her a few questions.
I don't advise it, Chief.
Yes, yes, I know, but I've got to solve this smuggling.
All right.
This is her room, isn't it?
Yeah, 921. The ones on either side, 923 and 919, are occupied by Inspectors Riley and Graham.
You don't take any chances, do you?
Not if we can help it. Come on. How is she?
All right, I guess. She's been asleep.
No, I'm not asleep.
Oh, Miss Wendt, you're awake. Feeling better?
Yes, thank you.
I'd like to ask you a few questions, if we may.
I'll help you all I can.
Miss Wendt, you told us earlier that you don't know where those sacks of heroin came from. Is that right?
Yes.
Are you here on business, Miss Wendt, or pleasure?
I was commissioned to bring a patient back to Shanghai. I'm a nurse at the Paulin Hospital in China.
What's his name?
Whose name?
A patient. Where does he live?
It's a woman. Mrs. Enders is her name. I'm supposed to meet her in this hotel.
Am I going to call the desk and get Mrs. Enders' room? I want to speak to her now.
Okay.
You, Hello. Bought your trunk abroad, didn't you?
In China.
And you don't know how that batch of narcotics got in there?
Absolutely not.
Is Mrs. Enders on the phone?
No, Chief, she's not registered here. They have no reservation for her either.
Hmm. That makes it a little more confusing, doesn't it?
Confusing? What do you mean by that?
You see, if you're an innocent dupe of a smuggling ring, we can't let you go until... Well, until we're convinced that you're innocent.
But I am innocent, I tell you. I don't know anything about that contraband.
I don't think you ought to continue, Chief.
All right, Doctor. We're leaving now, Miss Wendt, but we'll be back later. Come on, Michael and Miss Woodcock. Will you come here in a moment, please?
Certainly.
I want to talk to you outside.
What is it, Chief Powers?
Riley and Graham are in adjoining rooms. If you have to leave the room for even a moment, be sure the door is locked and be sure you tell them that you're leaving. I can't make this woman out, yet. She's guilty, she's a great actress. Well, I'm going to uncover the ring that she's working with if it's the last thing I do. Come on, Michael. Our work starts now.
Where to, Chief?
Headquarters. Let's see those receipts again, Michael.
Here they are, Chief.
Postal receipts made out to Maria Wendt for letters from Shanghai mailed to... What is this name, anyhow? Let's see. Looks like Laffelholz Brandstetter. Palace Hotel, Naples, Italy. Where'd you say you found these?
In a suitcase.
Ever hear of this man, Brandstetter?
No. No record either. I just checked that.
Well, then let's see how our friend Miss Wendt is feeling today. She ought to be able to tell us who he is and what she mailed to him.
She ought to, but will she?
Well, come on. We'll find that out soon enough. Did you find anything else in her baggage?
Oh, just some papers that seemed pretty harmless. Oh, say, Chief, I did learn something that may be interesting.
What's that?
Her father is European and her mother's Chinese.
She does look kind of Oriental, doesn't she?
She sure does. You know, I thought she was Chinese, but I couldn't figure out that name.
There's the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Well, come on. We can't lose any time.
Going up.
Here's the elevator, Michael.
Going up, please.
Hurry, Michael. This elevator is waiting.
Oh, I'm sorry I held you up. I saw something in the lobby, Chief.
Nine, please. What did you see?
Two Chinese women over at the desk. Well, I heard one of them ask for Mrs. Enders.
Did she?
Ninth floor, please. Going up.
We get off here, Chief.
Right. Well, tell me, did she ask for Mrs. Enders?
No, it was another name, but it sure sounded like Enders.
Had me frightened for a minute.
I said I thought she said Enders.
Wait a minute. Here's the room. 921.
It's funny Woodcock doesn't answer. Maybe she forgot the signal.
Not her. She's one of the best agents we have. This is strange. I'll try it. No, it's locked, all right. Get out your skeleton key.
Okay. All right, here it is.
Miss Woodcock? Oh, Miss Wendt? Say, what's going on here?
Hey, somebody's in there, Chief. I hear the shower.
Oh, that's why they don't hear me, I guess. Say, Miss Woodcock. Woodcock? Miss Wendt? Open up there, will you?
They must be deaf or something, Chief.
Open that door, Michael. I don't care who's in there.
Hey, jump with Jehoshaphat. She's gone.
What?
There's nobody here, Chief. Shower's running, but there's nobody here.
Turn it off. Well, in the world did she get out of here? There are no windows in the bathroom. That one there faces a court.
Yeah, and what happened to Woodcock?
I don't know, but I'm... Wait a minute. Here's someone at the door. Be quiet.
Chief Powers, what are you doing here?
Never mind what I'm doing. Where were you?
I just went down to the lobby to see my brother for a moment. Why? Is anything wrong?
Where's Miss Wendt?
Where is... Is she gone?
Miss Woodcock, tell us the truth. Where is Miss Wendt?
For goodness sake, Chief. I don't know, I tell you. I wasn't gone more than 5 minutes. Maybe Riley knows what happened.
Did you tell him you were leaving?
Of course I did.
Get Riley here immediately, Michael.
Yes, sir.
You know what this means, don't you?
I can't make it out, Chief Powers. How did she get away? I locked the door when I left.
It was locked when I arrived, too.
All right, here's Riley, Chief.
What's up, Chief?
Plenty. What were you doing next door, sleeping?
Why, what's that? Sleep? Why, no, I was watching.
You're
this.
A great help, Riley, both you and Woodcock. All you have to do is watch a sick woman and what happens. She walks out on you, right under your nose.
What? How in the world...
Never mind that stuff. Tell me, did you know Woodcock was leaving?
Well, sure, I did. About 10 minutes ago to see her brother.
Then what happened?
Miss Wendt called him in and asked if she could take a shower.
How did she know you were next door watching her?
I don't know. I figured one of you told her.
Well, I've seen dumb agents before, but you take the cake, Riley. She asked if she could take a shower.
Well, I heard the water running. I figured you...
You couldn't figure one and one. Come on, Michael, we're going back to the office. You, Riley, and you, Woodcock, get busy and see if you can find out what happened to this Wendt woman.
Yes, sir.
All right, Chief.
Michael, call the office and have them send someone. Make it Kruger. I want to tail Riley and Woodcock. Taking no chances. When you're through, come back to headquarters and we'll get to work. I've got an idea.
Yes, sir.
See a young woman about so tall and Chinese looking leave this hotel?
Mister, I ain't had a fare since the Chinese built the Great Wall.
Did a young Chinese woman come through here?
I can't tell you, ma'am. Thousands of chinks passed here. You sell any railroad tickets to a young woman?
Millions of them. What'd she look like and where's she going?
I don't know where she's heading, but she's part Chinese. Kind of refined. About 5 feet true, weighs about 150.
No, can't help him, sir.
How long have you been in front of this hotel?
About half an hour, lady.
Did you see a Chinese woman leave that hotel?
No, lady, I didn't.
That man ask you?
Say, what is
Hurry,
it?
I haven't got all day. What do you ask her?
Wanted to know if I saw some lady chink come out of that hotel. I told him I ain't had a fare since... Say, what's the idea running away that way?
See that woman?
The one that just went away?
Yeah, what'd she ask
you? Want to know if a Chinese gal came this way.
Ah, thanks.
Well, I seen nuts in my day, but I never...
young Chinese woman.
Pardon me, mister, but did you see a Chinese girl?
What's that man asking? Have you seen a young woman come out?
Lucky for them. What? I see. Yeah. How many? You know if they've got any leads? Don't look that way, eh? All right. No, you can come back. Yeah, goodbye.
What did Kruger report?
Oh, nothing. Right in Woodcock are okay, I guess.
Did they get any dope about the Wint girl?
No.
Looks like she sure flew the coop all right.
What? Through the coupe, eh? Well, maybe you're right, Michael. Hello. It's Chief Powers. Lee Cunningham, yeah. Hello, Cunningham. This is Powers. Listen, put this on the air immediately. I want it sent to all planes, particularly those heading east to New York. Here it is. Look for young woman, attractive. Height about 5'2". Weight about 115. Chinese.
Hello, 421. Hello, 421. Look for young woman, Chinese, height 5'2", weight 115, hair dark. Hello, Falcon. Hello, Falcon. Calling Falcon. Wanted by Customs Department, Chinese woman, young, attractive, height 5'2", weight 115. Calling Z-14. Calling Z-14. Hello, Z-14. Report if you have young Chinese woman passenger. Height 5'2", weight 115.
If our young bird is flying, we'll get her before long.
What next, Chief?
Michael, you remember that postal receipt that you found in Wentz's baggage?
That one from Shanghai to a man in Naples named Brandstetter?
We're going to try to find Maria Wynn through him.
I don't get you.
Well, if that woman is innocent, the chances are the Brandstetter is only a friend.
Mm-hmm.
But if Wendt is a member of a smuggling ring, the chances are the Brandstetter is one, too.
Oh, I see what you mean now.
Well, I'm going to try to find out where Brandstetter is. And I'm going to get Wendt when she tries to meet him. My guess is she's heading his way now.
You're a little optimistic, aren't you?
No, just determined. Come on.
Where to?
To the wireless room. We're going to take a little trip around the world. Oh... Hello, Riley.
No luck, Chief. We checked every cab driver around the hotel, everyone we could find.
None of them saw anyone that even looked like the Wendt girl.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
How did you find out, Chief?
Finding out is my job, Woodcock. Yours is losing, I guess. Come on, Michael. If anyone wants us, we're in the wireless room.
Want us to wait here, Chief?
Yes, I may need you.
You're sort of rubbing it into Riley and Woodcock, aren't you?
Yes, I am. But they deserve it, all right. It isn't often we get one of these birds red-handed like this. But when we do... Well, we like to keep them a while. That girl must be laughing up her sleeve.
I wonder how she got out of that room.
Well, that was easy. She just turned on the shower and Riley wasn't able to hear her open the door.
Yeah, but... Oh, here's the wireless room, Chief.
Hello, Chief. Suppose you want to know what we've got on that radio flash to airlines.
Did you hear anything yet?
Not yet.
Cunningham, I've got something that must go out immediately.
Yeah?
We found two postal receipts in Mario Wendt's bag for letters sent to a man named... Now, get this down.
Yes, sir.
Lawful Holtz Brandstetter.
Lawful Holtz Brandstetter.
Right.
Okay.
Now, we don't know who this fellow is, but I have a hunch that Wendt may try to contact him. If she does, we'll nab her. And if this man is mixed up in smuggling dope, too, well, that'll be fine.
I understand, Chief.
Hey, you forgot to tell him the letters were mailed to Naples, Chief.
Yes, that's right. All right, Cunningham, get going. Send a wireless to Naples and try to locate this man. We'll stand by.
Yes, sir. Now, let's see. Our office there is... Yeah, it is 437. Naples, 437. Naples, 437. United States Customs calling. Information required. Lawful Holtz Brandstetter, residing
Naples. When did he live there, Chief?
The receipts are dated January 1936 and sent to the Palace Hotel.
Right. Residing, Naples, Palace Hotel, January 1936. Reply immediate, please. U.S. Los Angeles, 188. U.S. Los Angeles, 188.
Well, how much longer do you think we'll have to wait, Cunningham?
Yeah, not long.
Well, I hope they get a line on him.
If they do, will you advise arrest?
No. I want him tailed until we pick up the trail of Maria Wimp. Then we...
Wait. There's the answer. Palace Hotel reports Loppelholtz, Brandstetter, sailed for United States, S.S. Helena... August 7th.
4 days ago.
Port of call, New York City. No other information at hand. End. Well, there you are, Chief. Looks like Brandstetter is heading for New York right in your lap.
Come on, we're flying to New York. Thanks, Cunningham.
Yeah, not at all.
And Michael?
Yes, sir?
Get Riley and Woodcock to come along. Make it snappy. I'll arrange for a plane. I'll pick you up in about 10 minutes. In New York, you and I are going to board the Helena before she docks. You, Riley, and you, Woodcock, hang around the pier, mingle with the crowd, and look for Wendt.
Yes, sir.
And if you spot her, don't let her take another shower.
Gee, Chief, you ain't ever...
Well, there it is, SS Helena.
Won't Brandstetter be surprised when he meets this reception committee?
Yeah. All right, Captain. Pull up alongside of her, will you?
Aye, sir.
There she is, sir. Hold on now. Be careful.
Oh, we can make it. There we are. Oh, Michael.
Right behind you, sir.
Right. There we are.
Yes, sir.
Are you Chief Powers?
Yes, sir. And you are Captain Ardsley?
Yes, sir. I received your message. Right this way, sir.
Does he know what...
I don't think so. His cabin is on this deck. Right there, sir, 31.
Is he in there now?
I believe so, sir.
Thank you, Captain.
Will you need any help?
I don't think so. I think we can handle him all right.
All right, sir, I'll go on deck. We're docking in a few minutes.
Brandstetter? Anybody in here?
I hear someone, Michael. Draw your gun.
I've got it ready.
Open this door. Open this door, Brands. Cut him and break it down if you don't.
Sure, someone's in there. Where's the captain? We'll get his key.
He went up.
Well, then we'll have to break this door in. Come on.
Okay.
Michael. 1, 2, 3. Come on, let's go. Look out there, Michael.
I'm all right, Chief.
I didn't... Wait a minute. Stay outside, please. Stay outside, all of you.
Well, what do you think?
Dead. Stone dead. Shot right through the head.
I wonder why he shot himself.
He'll never tell us. And don't forget, innocent men don't kill themselves this way.
Say, you want me to search this room, Chief?
No, not yet. We'll have the door guarded and stand by. It's Wendt we want now.
She's docking now, Chief.
I wonder if Riley or Woodcock have had any luck.
I hope so. I'll bet they do, too.
Well, the gangplank's down.
Yeah, and... Hey, Chief!
What is it?
There, look! Through that porthole.
Well, I don't see...
Wendt! It's Maria Wendt, there on the pier.
You see Riley or Woodcock around?
I can't make up. Well, the crowd's moving around, so...
Come on. Hey, you. Are you the steward?
Yes, sir.
Stand in front of this door. And don't let anyone enter until we return. Here's my badge, U.S. Customs Department. Come on, Mike.
Okay.
You behind me, Michael?
Keep going. I'm keeping my eye on it, Chief.
Yes, you... You're standing over there with Chief.
Follow me, right there.
What?
For chimney's sake, she's gone, Chief. She was standing right there by that pole.
Slipped right through our fingers. That's the second time. She must have seen us come down the gangplank.
She slipped away, Wendt. We could have had her.
Hey, Chief, we got a surprise for you. Here's your friend.
Wendt, where'd you find her?
Oh, I spotted her the minute you got here.
You got anything to say, Miss Wendt?
What is there to say?
Plenty before we're through with you. Come on. We're going to a nice, quiet place without showers where we can talk.
Ah, gee, Chief, ain't you ever going...
Wentz. Sit down over there. Now tell us, where'd you get that dough?
I guess there's no use now.
Absolutely none. Innocent women don't escape from custody. You might as well tell us everything, Miss Wendt.
Sure, what's the difference? I'm sick, you know that. The doctors say I won't live another year.
I'm sorry you're sick, Miss Wendt, but you'll have
to... Yes, yes, I understand. I'll have to take the consequences just the same. Well, I don't know how I got away with it as long as I did.
You've been smuggling dope for a long time?
A long time? Sure, years. I thought I'd never be caught till I met you.
Where'd you get that heroin?
In Shanghai. It was stolen from a hospital.
Which one?
What difference does it make?
Which hospital, Miss Wendt?
Paulin Hospital.
Got that, Michael?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, Chief.
Miss Wendt, how'd you escape from that hotel?
That was easy. I turned on the shower, then I phoned a friend in the hotel who came up and opened my door. That was all.
Yeah, well, who was your friend?
A Chinese woman that I met.
Did you stop at the desk on your way out?
Sure, for a moment I thought I'd die. You didn't recognize me in those funny clothes, did you?
Oh, so that was you, huh?
Miss Wendt, who stole the narcotics in the Fulham Hospital?
I don't know. I received my instructions from someone.
Who?
Some man.
Ramstetter?
Yes, how did you know?
Well, you won't receive any more instructions from him.
You arrested him?
Better than that. He's dead.
He's dead? You killed him?
No, he shot himself.
He shot himself? He's dead? I won't ever see him again. Oh, no, you killed him. You killed him.
Oh. Look at this file, Chief. U.S. versus Mario Wendt. Remember that case?
Remember it? How can I ever forget it?
You know, Chief, she was lucky to be deported.
Lucky? I don't know about that. She won't live another year. What difference does it make where she's buried?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Remember how she passed out when you told her Branstad had killed himself?
Why not? Didn't she admit later she was going to marry him?
She certainly was head over heels in love with him.
Yeah, but that sure was a big price to pay for love, all right.
Yeah? That love affair with a little smuggling on the side cost two lives, maybe a third. Branstetter and the superintendent of that Shanghai hospital killed themselves when they knew they were caught. And our shipboard beauty, who almost got away with it, is probably dead by now. Three lives for smuggling dope. Gee. Gives me the shivers to even think of it.
Like a cold shower, ain't she?
You have just heard a thrilling story taken from the pages of True Detective Mysteries Magazine, a McFadden publication.
Well, that's another fine night transmissions in the can. So, well, it's almost in the can. Before I go, I want to mention that you can write me, if you're so inclined, at nighttransmissions@gmail.com. I also want to mention that the website, www.nighttransmissions.com, is out there on the Internet. And there's a good deal of ancillary material there. More details about the shows. And even the occasional link to go a little bit deeper into the history of the show. Some people actually think it's worth a visit. Well, I don't want to lie to you. Nobody's ever actually told me that. On second thought, why shouldn't I lie to you? I mean, everybody lies to us, huh? It's a wonderful place. Free pretzels and beer. Go. You'll like it there. Anyway, this is the end of what I like to call the dramatic presentation portion of Night Transmissions. So we'll spend the next few minutes just listening to some music. Usually there's no theme to the music. It's just stuff that I like and kind of hope you'll like. Anyway, take care of yourself. I'm Gary Clinton, and you're whoever the hell you are.